Egg Podders, mark your calendars for Saturday, 6th of July 2024, as Egg Pod Live returns to Opera Holland Park, London, for the last Egg Pod of all, to celebrate the milestone 60th anniversary of the premiere of A Hard Day's Night, which was 6th of July 1964. Join us for another afternoon of Beatles magic and nostalgia. Special guests are Mark Lewison, the world's leading Beatles historian, an author of Tune In, The Beatles Recording Sessions, Beatles Chronicle, and many more. Eggpod favourite Samira Ahmed returns to Eggpod Live for 2024. Last year, Samira was instrumental in unearthing a previously unheard recording of the Beatles at Stowe School from 4th of April 1963, the earliest known UK live concert audio. Actor, writer and comedian Lawrence Rickard joins us. Best known for Ghosts, Horrible Histories, Yonderland and We Are Not Alone, Lawrence joins the Eggpodders to share his love for A Hard Day's Night. Stuart McConey. Stuart is a legendary radio DJ and TV presenter, writer, journalist and critic, working in the field of pop music and popular culture. And David Quantick, novelist, comedy writer and critic. David has worked as a journalist and a screenwriter. You know who David is. So stay tuned for further guest announcements. Don't miss your chance to meet other Beatles fans as well as the guests. Save the day for Saturday, 6th of July 2024, and join us at Opera Holland Park, London, for a fab afternoon of A Hard Day's Night fun. Tickets are available from iamtheeggpod.com. Hello, and welcome to I'm the Eggpod with me, Chris Shaw. The Eggpods take a jaunty stroll through Pepperland, discussing the Beatles and solo Beatle albums with a potpourri of delicious guests. Well, I've just got back from London. I've been to see Let It Be, well, UK premiere, I suppose, at the Curzon Cinema in Mayfair. Wow! And I just wanted to share that evening with you, as well as my thoughts on the new Let It Be, which 8th of May 2024, restored 1970 film directed by Michael Lindsay Hogg, is finally, after all these years, streaming on Disney Plus. And I know many people listening to this will have either a ropey bootleg of this on a video or watched it online on archive.org. And I think usually they're recorded from the TV, so they're dark, grainy, the audio's terrible. And in fact, Michael Lindsay Hogg mentioned this on a previous Eggpod.
Going back to your use of the word chutzpah, I have to say, I mean, we'll talk about it in a sec, but the Peter Jackson movie, you're kind of like part of, you're kind of in the documentary of the documentary now, aren't you? Going back to what you were saying about the, I think there's a phrase, and it's better to ask for forgiveness than permission. But when you were doing the secret mics hidden away and the hidden cameras catching the police, which are basically the best parts of the whole thing, and also putting the camera crew on the building opposite. And I'm guessing that, I think you mentioned sort of herding cats. It must have been a complete nightmare for you. I do love the feeling that you're like this, what were you, 28 at the time? You're just, yeah fuck it, I'm just going to get everything I can here. Did you just, I mean, I guess the word ethics comes into it at some point, but what do you think?
Well, in for a penny, in for a pound. and that's what Peter felt when he was putting Get Back together again. Is he, I think originally it was going to be shorter. It was going to be, had to be a certain length for Disney to put in the movie theaters. And Peter, because the COVID came along and Peter sort of got pushed back a year and he went on looking things and cutting. And they had a shorter cut, and then, yeah, that was going to be okay. But then Peter had all this other material he wanted to put in. And he thought, well, if I don't do it, no one's going to do it. And so that's why it ended up as this wonderfully, I mean, I've always said to Peter, I said, you know, you were lucky you had a canvas which would be big enough for Rubens, where I only had a canvas big enough for Vermeer. But also, he's been very interesting, you know, because he says that the pictures are not, Let It Be and Get Back, are not in any way rivals. He says they're companions. And he's a great advocate, I think, of Let It Be coming out again, and we'll see what happens, you know, with all of that. I mean, I'd like it to, because it had a bad rep for two reasons. Very quickly, one is it was released in America and in England a month after they'd officially broken up. So a lot of people thought it was the breakup movie. They had no idea when it was shot. It could have been shot because there wasn't social media telling people what to think, and the press release didn't do it because it was sort of abandoned by Apple because Apple was falling apart and the Beatles were fighting so much. It was released after they'd broken up, and people thought it was the breakup movie, which it wasn't. And so they seized in that little scene I talked about earlier between Paul and George as the really fighting scene. Wasn't at all. Then Apple screened it. I think it was shown over a couple of Christmases in the early 70s. Then for a variety of reasons, it was taken out of commission. And then what was available come the 70s was bootlegs.
Yes.
And bootlegs are usually, as you know, if someone gets a bootleg and, you know, says, oh boy, the quality is great. Well, the quality is what you might call sufficient, but it's usually crummy with bad sound. And so the only exposure people were getting for the last 30 years to Let It Be has been very bad audio, very bad picture quality. So it'd be good to see it again, because it does exist, to see it again as it should be. And also, there's no sense in Let It Be that they don't love each other, which they did and do in Life and Death. They were brothers, you know. You fight with your brother, you don't fight with your brother. But it's a very happy picture and a serious picture about what's going on with them at the time. But then you get up on the roof and there's joy on the roof. They really, because that's what they did at their best for 5 or 8 years. They made joy in the world. The world was, especially after President Kennedy was killed, the world needed joy. And that's what they made on the roof, and they felt themselves on the roof. And that was what's so great at the roof. My babysitter's driving on the one after 909.
So a lot of this, I think, is all about context, because in May 1970, when Let It Be came out, everyone knew that the Beatles had split. So this was kind of deemed right from the start as a dour, dark movie. Everyone said dark, dark, dark. But that's how it's been viewed for all these years. And one of the reviews, well, it's more about the album, but they described it as a cardboard tombstone. And that's sort of stuck for all these years. Get Back, Peter Jackson's version, changed a lot of that. And it was when it was released as well. It was in the darkest times, in lockdown, COVID. Get Back was just what we needed. It was timed so perfectly. We all wanted it. We all needed it. We all needed that respite. Whereas in 1970, the darkness was, the Beatles had split, but they'd only just announced it. So it's kind of different, because the film was seen immediately in that context. The context is everything about this. But yeah, Let It Be, post Get Back in 2024, absolutely shines. So yeah, 7th of May 2024, there was this special screening at the Curzon in Mayfair. Basically, I got an email from Stuart McConey saying, are you going? I've been invited. And of course I wasn't. I never get invited to these things. So I came along as his plus one. So bless your heart, Stuart. You've just made the best night of my life. I absolutely loved every moment. I probably annoyed everybody there because I was just this bouncing puppy dog. Just wanted to speak to everybody. But I enjoyed it. So, hey, where to begin? I think with the film itself, the quality is a million times better than what's been seen before on bootlegs and on the old TV broadcast back in the 70s. I think there's one in the 80s as well. And Michael Lindsay-Hogg's direction,
is brilliant, and I've never noticed it before because, like so many people, I've been watching these awful quality things, and you're kind of leaning into the film, trying to work out what they're saying and what's going on. You can't quite see or hear. Here, you've got all these Michael Lindsay Hogg close-ups, sort of close-up on Paul's lips or Paul's fingers or John's mouth, and it's very much like what he did on Ready, Steady, Go. If you remember those old footage where they sort of zoom in and out? Very much like that, and it's brilliant. It's completely different footage to what was in Get Back. And George, I mean, this the editing is great because George doesn't quit in this version, which I find very amusing. And Michael had mentioned this before, why that had happened, as well as the editing process, which was very simple, really.
So it was quite an adventure, Chris, the whole thing.
One thing I'd really love to know about is, I mean, you've mentioned it a bit before in various interviews about the post-production of this. So you've done a rough edit of the movie, and we know the story that three people wanted less of John and Yoko in it, and three people from the Beatles hastened to it. But do you still have that first edit, and can you remember what was in it and what was taken out? I know we're talking half a century ago here, but worth a note.
No, I mean, usually I have that, but I haven't. See, the thing is that we did take it out, and then we never put it in again. It basically was more of, it would be shots, because they when they were speaking, John and Yoko would be sort of intimate. I mean, but there'd be just shots which I had of them as a couple, sometimes not sitting in the little circle of me making the music, but sitting on that box on the side, or maybe isolating them a little more, you know, before the others came back from lunch or they came back from lunch, they'd be sitting talking. So I just was using some footage more often to point out that they were a couple, as they were a couple in a quartet, which made the quartet a quintet. But so therefore it's just more of them. And I think what the feeling was when Peter Brown said, I've had three people call me today. I think it was the fact of them being shown to be as well as part of a group, but also an isolated couple.
Yeah. So did you feel, I mean, I guess Alan Klein as well basically wanted just the Beatles really in the movie. Did you feel that the film was being taken out of your control?
No, never, never. Alan Klein, in fact, I actually liked him a lot. I never had a problem with him either then or later on when we got all the footage of the Rock and Roll Circus back together again. I like him. He's very funny, but I never had big financial dealings with him. I mean, certainly not in the millions or even semi-millions. No, the only thing he said at one point after we showed an interim rough cut, he said the movie's too long. He said it's like 10 minutes too long. And so fortunately, rather than doing little nips and tucks, I was able to take out a whole reel and no one noticed it. That's the weird thing. I had no interference really from anyone, especially not Alan. Not creatively, also because he was new to the Beatles. I mean, he had a lot of chutzpah. He was new to the Beatles and was really trying to sort out their financial affairs, which I alluded to earlier. That one of the days we were having lunch at Twickenham before George left, they were talking about how much money was going through the bank accounts and they weren't getting it back. They'd opened that store, Apple, and no one, you know, I think the idea was you could pay what you wanted for a T-shirt. If you didn't want to pay, you could walk out with it for free, which a lot of people did. And I think Brian Epstein, who had been loyal to the Beatles, I don't know how good a businessman he was. I don't know how much he was collecting foreign royalties, et cetera, but I know they were starting to get worried about money in the big sense. I mean, they still had their house, they still had their cars. But the money that they were used to having available to them to make albums and stuff, they were worried about. Alan was very good about that, and John liked him. And so he got the the three of John, George, and Ringo to go along. And then Paul wanted his brother-in-law, John Eastman, and his father-in-law, Lee Eastman, who were very successful New York lawyers who also managed and oversaw artist estates like William de Kooning or Mark Rothko. And then, as so often happens, when it looks like what the fight is about is money, is then it turns out to be about other things that someone did wrong 10 years ago. And no, but as far as interference is concerned, there was basically none. I mean, I was lucky. I mean, I've had more interference in other movies I've done than with them.
Like the FBI and the CIA and the BBC.
But again, there's no context whatsoever in this film, which I think doesn't matter. I think everybody knows the Beatles story now. Beatles fans will have sat through 8 hours of Get Back. So we know the story. But in this, suddenly Billy Preston suddenly appears for no reason. He's just there and there's no explanation. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's just the sheer joy of the music. The difference between this and Get Back is there's, you get fuller versions of songs. It's weird because I've seen this film so many times in the past and it's been like a chore. But seeing it live in the cinema, the music as well, it's been re-edited, remixed. Incredible. It was pounding through the floorboards. The print quality is, I think Paul Abbott on the Big Beatles Sort Out mentioned this before, that Michael didn't want it to be as, which a lot of people said, that AI kind of waxiness to the Beatles' skin, everybody's skin, and the whole thing. But Michael deliberately said, no, I want it to be more grainy, like the original film, like it was the film, which it's done. But again, infinitely superior to what we'd seen before. You've still got the focus. It's grainy, but you can still see the details. You've got the Beatles with a 5 o'clock shadow and spots. There's so many spots. Ringo has a really juicy one that looks like it had been freshly burst that very morning upon his chin. And the edit, yeah, it's very much the Paul McCartney show. As Michael mentioned before, that he edited out a lot of John and Yoko stuff. So no one really speaks other than Paul. And it's all him, oh, come on, lads, I just think we should do this. I think he comes across better in Get Back, because there's so much more context. But yeah, you can see why a lot of writers at the time would have said, oh, he was bossing them about, and let's do the easy was inevitable. There's much more music than Get Back. So I like to think of this as a music video, really, with the occasional bit of dialogue. You view it in that way, and it's wonderful. All those, and in super stereo as well, remixed. It's just perfect, perfect. The audio is incredible. Even songs like Dig It, which I don't think is anybody's particular favourite by the Beatles, sounds incredible. It pounds through those old dark, grainy bootleg videos. It's hard to notice what's actually going on. But here you can see George Martin is so involved, and he's on the percussion, shaking whatever it is he's shaking. And it's so much fun, little Heather running around and dancing and spinning and Mal playing along. Lovely. Another highlight is the electric version of Two of Us, which we finally get in super stereo, and it sounds so good. And it's one of the many, many highlights. Again, it's something we don't see as much in Get Back, but it's always been one of my favourites because I really enjoy this version. And Paul and John are just, they're having so much fun. They are brothers. Just forget all the rubbish that's gone on over the previous years. Forget what's about to happen over the next few years. They are two 16-year-old kids pissing about. The rooftop, again, absolutely zero context in this film. But it doesn't matter, because every Beatles fan already knows the story. When Paul marches on the rooftop, we know what's going on. I still wonder, there could have been an alternate version where he's jumping up and down, testing the stability of the floors, or he actually goes smashing through the floorboards and landing on Jimmy the Mod Doorman downstairs. Jimmy the Mod Doorman is hilarious as well. I've forgotten, because I haven't seen this for so long. When PC's Ray Dagg and co. make their sheepish exit at the end. His smirk is wonderful. He's smirking right at them, and he knows they can see him. They know he's doing it, and he just could not give a monkey's. Oh, joy. So anyway, let me tell you about the special screening, as it was described, which was Tuesday, May the 7th. Incredible. A beautiful venue. Everyone was there. Not Paul, not Ringo, but Glyn Johns was there. He looked, well, super cool as ever. Who else? Hunter Davis. One of the best things, being the plus one with Stuart McConey. Everybody knew him. And I was like, oh, hello, I'm with him. And it was fantastic. So yeah, so the film, after the movie, there was a Q&A. This was chaired by radio and TV broadcaster Edith Bowman, who was brilliant. She was so good. Jonathan Clyde, who was the executive producer of Get Back, has worked on Now and Then. He's done loads and loads of Beatles stuff. And journalist John Harris, journalist, writer and critic. And I got a question, although it wasn't really a question. I was just so hyper. It was basically a reappraisal of Michael Lindsay Hogg, just saying, you know, all these years he's been getting abused for making this dark movie. And he didn't. It was just, you know, time and perspective. And after it, got a round of applause. So Michael Lindsay Hogg got a round of applause. How lovely is that?
I've got a feeling deep inside. Oh, yeah.
Oh, after, right, described as private post-screening reception at a venue in London, which was basically just a booze-up with canapes. It was incredible. There was Giles Martin was there, Guy Pratt and Gary Kemp, raconteurs, Felix White, I didn't actually see him, Sanjeev Bhaskar, who I spent most of the evening hugging, I seem to recall, but hey. John Sim, Life on Mars, Doctor Who, et al., Eddie Izzard, Paul Merton. Paul Merton was there. He was chatting away to Stuart. Again, I was hanging on Stuart's coattails and didn't have the courage to speak to him. And one of my favourite people, Matt Everett, was there. He was incredible. Between him and Stuart, they introduced me to so many people. Matt obviously knows Giles Martin because he's done loads of stuff with Apple and the Beatles. And he introduced, said, oh, come and meet Chris. He does Eggpod. And Giles knew me. He knew who I was. I was like, And I was telling him about the story when I was in a band back in the 90s. We took a demo to George. And his mum, as in Giles' mum, said, come on, George, just take this tape and put it in your pocket, which he did. And everybody knew that he was just immediately going to throw it away. But she did that. And he was really happy with that story. So it's lovely to meet him after all this time. Guy Pratt and Gary Kemp. Gary Kemp, again, I said, hello, I'm Christopher Eggpod. And he said, oh, yeah, I know who you are. Still not coming on the show, but hey. But Guy Pratt did, and I did interview a few people because I thought, well, I've got my phone here. I might as well record a few Vox Pops. So I'll be playing some of those in a bit. Guy Pratt, I cornered outside the toilet. Man, I sound like such a stalker. It wasn't like that. It was, well, maybe it was. Yeah, and it was just incredible. Just such one of those profound evenings. I've literally just got home. Still a bit pissed, actually, but hey. So, well, let's hear what some people thought about the show.
Okay, I'm here at the after party of Let It Be with Stuart McConey and Matt Everett. So, Stuart and Matt, what are your first impressions? Stuart?
I think everyone's saying the same kind of thing, that we know that Get Back has changed our opinion of the whole narrative of the last days of the Beatles, but so has this movie, because literally it's lighter, it's a better print, and it just, yeah, everyone seems to be remembering that. I mean, it is no context, if you like. You don't understand why Billy Preston's turned up, you're not given any narrative story, but But on a big screen, we just all watched it on a big screen. And you just it makes you remember again. They weren't at each other's throats. They were having difficulties, but at that point, they were rejuvenated in their love of the Beatles. And some of those performances, Let It Be and the Rooftop Fonties, are staggering. Again, it's a cliche to say, but you need to be periodically reminded of just how brilliant the Beatles were, and it did that.
Yeah,
Matt.
I mean, I saw it on VHS, like everyone said, years ago, decades ago, and then left it. And then a few years ago, watched it online again on my laptop. And that's not the same film. It is the same film.
Yeah,
it's exactly the same film. The edits are the same. But it's not the same film. The brightness, the sound, the context that you're watching it in, it's like a different movie again. It sounds kind of weird. But seeing... George's hair is like looking at a Gauguin sky, the richness, the swirl. It's like a Van Gogh, like, rich auburn sunset. George's hair at that scale in that cinema.
John Higgs in his great book about Bond and the Beatles, Love and Let Die, makes a really good point of saying every day when the Beatles change their look or when they look different, no man had ever looked before.
Yeah.
Well, not for 500 years. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But every time, you know, they looked different. Every day they were looking completely differently than any bloke around them looked.
Yeah, yeah. And George's hair is in that high def is just... It requires a credit of its own. And then seeing, and it's been talked about a lot, hasn't it? Every time you see Lennon and McCartney, when they're eye to eye, they're the only people that will really listen to each other and take it on board and take stuff that no one else, because they're the only people that are those two people. Seeing that on that scale is just...
That electric version of Two of Us.
I know, yeah.
No, there's so many moments where you see the two of them. I mean, obviously, it's about the four of them.
Yeah.
But there are just so many moments when you see the two of them harmonising close-up or whatever, or looking at each other. And all the kind of bullshit fades away. And you think, these four guys loved each other.
Yeah.
The Beatles is a love story.
That's the thing,
the Beatles is a love story. And you know, and it's so gorgeous. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And yeah, and the harmonies as well, when they just... And all of them, they just start dropping the harmonies in to experiment as they're working out the songs. And you're like... And they're on point every time. They're just perfect. Every time they try a harmony, you're like, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. Or that version's beautiful. That's beautiful. Oh, amazing.
Okay, so I'm here with Johnson and Sanjeev Bhaskar.
Yeah.
Previous EGPOD guest. So...
Oh, you've been on it?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Help. You did the Help album. Let's hear your thoughts. I don't know who wants to go first.
I think John.
My thoughts? Well, as I was just saying then to Sanjeev, I have got that really shit VHS.
Yeah.
And that's the only time I've seen it. And it was a long time ago. And I did think it was just dark in every sense of the word at the time. And because I didn't know at the time that it came out after, that it was made before Abbey Road... To me, it was like everybody. It was just the end. It was sad. They were arguing. It was really hard to watch in every sense of the word. But that is like a veil has been lifted. And, you know, thanks to Get Back. And now we know, we've seen the making of it. And, you know, so we know, you know, the story behind it. That was revelatory. And
it did need that context.
It needed that context. But also, you know, you think that the filming of it, I mean, Michael Lindsay-Hogg needs reappraisal because it's brilliantly filmed. All those close-ups of the you know, the lips and the eyes and the fingers on the piano and then like the sort of crash zooms, and it's brilliantly done. And I think that will now do for his reputation what the remasters did for Ringo's. You know, when you sort of, you know, you hear the clarity of it.
Yes.
But I loved it. And I was just saying then that I've seen Get Back about four or five times. And I was getting a little bit sick of the policeman thing. And I thought, I just want to see the gig.
Yes.
And there's the gig. And I looked, the fact it was all music. I mean, Dig It.
Mm.
The whole thing.
That was a weird thing.
Oh, my God. It was like... Oh, it was so good. It blew my mind. And as soon as I get home, I'm going to watch it again.
Sanjeev.
Well, I mean, John's put it so well that other than saying, what John said, I couldn't put it any better. But you know, but also just to echo what John was saying, I saw the bootleg version of the old film, and it is dark. And also, when you're told it's about the breakup, because of its darkness, you buy into that. After the Get Back screening that we both went to before the series came out, I remember chatting to Paul McCartney, and I asked him, I said, how does that feel for you, you know, watching that and seeing the others? And he said, well, I'd bought into that myth about the breakup and how awful it was, and so I bought into that narrative. And so for him, Get Back reappraised his relationship with his bandmates and his friends. And as John said, you know, the fact that we now see this in the context of Get Back and the you know, the refurbed print as well, and the new sound, which, you know, Giles Martin is kind of overseeing, means that you do view it as this joyous piece of film, as opposed to this kind of like now apocryphal sad breakup film. It's anything but that. You see their connection. You see their connection through the music. You see it in the moment. And I think, you know, Get Back has given us that. So they're wonderful companion pieces.
Guy Pratt, we're standing outside the toilet.
Yes.
Tell me what you thought of that.
I thought it was absolutely brilliant. What was interesting, and it, I think something that came up in the Q&A afterwards was a really good point, which is that seeing that film now in the context of having seen all that other footage, it's not as bleak as you thought it was. You always assumed it was this terribly bleak kind of band breaking up thing. And especially all that, you know, there was this kind of Yoko vibe, and it was just wasn't there. And it was beautiful, and it was just joyous. Utterly, utterly joyous, I thought. And just the fucking charisma pouring off Paul McCartney. You know.
Unbelievable. Yeah. It's I think, as we said, it needed 8 hours of documentary to bring this film alive.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's quite a good thing that John Harris said, the thing of it's like watching Apocalypse Now once you've seen Heart of Darkness, the documentary about making it. It's very true. But maybe we need that for everything. Maybe we need to Peter Jackson needs to go and just spend his life just trawling through footage so we can reappraise everything.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Eddie Izzard, what did you think of Let It Be, the new version?
Well, I think Let It Be, I think it was said, articulated before, that Let It Be could be the father and Get Back is the son. I suppose you could do different analogies on it, but the film together, there are no subtitles, there are no narratives coming up on the screen where they're guiding you the way. So it's done without that. So it's harder in that medium. I mean, you see the songs more complete as opposed to their development. So I think they go together. They're a companion piece. It could be as a companion documentary to the Get Back documentary, even though it came out first. And it's not as downbeat as I thought it was. It doesn't actually feel downbeat. It's just that the Beatles were splitting up when it first came out. So I suppose that was the downbeat part of it. But I do think people like... If you think what you have now, if you have something like a Big Brother or reality program where they just put people in a place and turn the cameras on, that's what they did back then. And just to sit there and watch people that you know really well interact, that is a fascinating thing. But it took them ages to do something like that in the real world. So, but reality TV, I'm not really a big fan of, but that reality TV, I am a fan of. So if the Beatles are doing it, yes. If other people are doing it, not so much. So yeah, I like this, and apparently it comes out tomorrow. Did you know that? It's on Disney Plus tomorrow, so I will watch it again.
It was the music was just pounding through your feet.
Yes, music is great. So great to watch it. Hopefully everyone can get that, and then they can watch that, and they can go backwards and forwards between the two.
Don't let me down. Don't let me down.
So what's next? DVD release? No news yet, but I think it's inevitable, really. I think once the Disney Plus viewers start dwindling, it's going to be inevitable, really. I don't know if they'll... Well, there can't really be any extras, can they? Because we've got Get Back. They are the extras. So it'll be as it is. You might get a few extra... A little postcard in there or something. So overall, perspective and context are everything. Get Back and Let It Be stand alone as pieces. Which, there's the interview at the beginning between Peter Jackson and Michael Lindsay-Hogg. They're talking about, you know, how they do complement each other. I think, absolutely right. They are two distinct things. Get Back is a documentary. Let It Be is the result. Different footage in each. Different film quality. They're perfect. And the thing for me, it really made me want to listen to the album, the Let It Be album. Especially the Glyn Johns Get Back version, which totally sums up what we've just been watching. And, yeah, we know, watching either of them, we know the ending of the Beatles story. They split up. But Get Back and Let It Be, they both have a sort of bittersweet finale. Peter Jackson's version, it ends with them larking about. They've just finished The Rooftop, and now it's the final day, and they're sort of messing around. It ends on a kind of sweet note, but, you know, they're still going to split up. But Michael Lindsay-Hogg's, it concludes with the rebellious rockers peeing off the authorities and upper classes, which is exactly what they did throughout their career in Hamburg. Oh, it's the perfect ending. So, this emergency egg pod, I know it's not very long, but I just wanted to get it out there. And thanks again to Stuart McConey and Matt Everett and Sanjeev Bhaskar and John Sim and Guy Pratt. It was just a joy. Go and watch it now. It's brilliant. Hey! Hey!